Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Wednesday. It's July 1st, 2026. Hope you're having a great July so far, even though it's just starting. Wishing you a beautiful day and a beautiful, happy 4th of July early. Things going on this week and some major news out of the Supreme Court, as I'm sure you heard, two big cases that we're covering for you this morning. So instead of the news, which we normally do, of course, after the weather, I'm right out of the gate to keep you up to date to everything, on everything through a Catholic perspective. Our newscast, basically, is going to be an interview with Matt Sharp from Alliance Defending Freedom, Senior Counsel and Vice President of Public Affairs, involved in the big Supreme Court win upholding rulings that state that states can ban transgender athletes from female sports. So we'll get to that right after the weather in about 2 minutes. Father Dave Pavaca, the one, the only, president of Franciscan University, he's joining us talking about how colleges can help students seek and live the truth. There's a concept for you, right? Speaking of truth in terms of the dignity of the human person. And then we're going to continue our discussion regarding the Supreme Court decision with Mary Pennant Father. If you remember, she is from Christendom College, and she was a captain of a women's basketball team, and she was at the Supreme Court when this case was presented to the court when the trial opened a few months ago. And then Mary Rice Hansen is also going to be joining us, and she's director of the Person and Identity Project of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and she has done a lot on this topic as well. So it's a busy first hour. Second hour, we are going to be talking about a very big patriotic topic, and that is the founding of the United States and the connection to the Catholic Church. And that will be the majority of our time for our number two. Now, at some point, and we may even get to it tomorrow with a reaction from Father Mitch Pacwa, we'll discuss the other big case that's out there, the birthright citizenship issue that came up in the Supreme Court in their big announcement yesterday. But first, without further ado, we'll get to the weather and the news in the second hour of the program. I want to get right to our guest because he's a very busy man, and we're grateful to have him. Matt Sharp, Alliance Defending Freedom, Senior Counsel, Vice President of Public Policy, and of course, this is a huge win. Their clients, just a big, big, big story. Matt, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so first of all, your response when you heard the news yesterday.
Yeah, well, this was an exciting victory. For far too long, too many women have been denied opportunities to compete, opportunities to win. And so to see the court strongly rule, not only just a majority, but a 9-0 decision on the Title IX question, saying that Title IX does not prohibit states from protecting fairness in women's sports, that's an encouraging sign. So we were very happy to see this. But this victory was focused on those 27 states that have passed women's sports laws. That means there's 23 states that have not, and we got to go after them. We've got to make sure that a woman is protected on the playing field no matter where she lives.
So are the challenges done then? I mean, does this set precedent for the entire country in addition to the 27 states?
Well, it definitely sets precedent. It makes clear that these laws do not violate Title IX. They do not violate equal protection. In fact, the court was very strong to say, if we do not protect women, it's going to impact their safety. It's going to impact competitive fairness. So it sets a strong precedent that if we're not honoring those duties to protect women's safety, to protect competitive fairness, that's a problem. And so we are going to be going on, and already are going on, the offense against the states that haven't passed these laws. We've got lawsuits in Minnesota and Washington where we're representing female athletes that have not only lost opportunities, but in our Washington state case, Callie Keeler was actually sexually assaulted on the wrestling mat when she was forced to wrestle against a male and had no idea that she was doing so. So it shows the real harms of these policies. It's not just losing a medal. It's not just losing a spot on the team. But these girls are being sexually assaulted, threatened, and that is something we will not tolerate.
Yeah, we were talking before we went live on the air just a few minutes ago. I was questioning whether the other side in this case, did they really think they had a case at all? Did they think it was going to get to the Supreme Court? Because it seems as if once you get there, not only just the makeup of the court, but when you try to defend something that is so beyond ridiculous and common sense in terms of biological males, females, how we're made, it doesn't seem that they would have had any chance at all.
Yeah, they very late in the case tried to moot this, tried to argue, well, the athlete in Idaho, a male that identifies as a female, he's not competing anymore. I think they saw the writing on the wall, as well they should, because 80% of Americans strongly agree that men have no place on women's teams. And so they were trying to backpedal and get out of this, but the court rightfully said, no, you filed this lawsuit, this male has been competing, he could compete again. We're going to issue a ruling to make sure that Idaho and the other states that have passed these laws, that those laws can go into effect, that the women and young girls benefited by these laws can receive those full benefits. So we were encouraged to see the court throw out the efforts to moot this case and move full forward with the strong opinion that we saw yesterday.
You weren't surprised then, because you knew you had a very, very strong case.
Yeah, that's right. We've got 50-plus years of history with Title IX. First off, there is no doubt that when Congress wrote Title IX and it said we don't discriminate on the basis of sex, it knew what a man was and it knew what a woman was. Despite what the court, some members of the court may say, it knew exactly what it was doing, and it was guaranteeing those equal opportunities for women. And I loved how Justice Kavanaugh described in his opinion how before Title IX, the number of women competing in sports was just paltry. And now over 3.5 million women are getting the benefits of Title IX. So there's no doubt of what Congress intended to do, that it was wanting to make sure that women have equal opportunities. It was very clear that it said states can have separate teams on the basis of sex. So we knew that history was with us. We knew that the plain language of Title IX was with us. But above all that, we knew common sense and the truth were with us, that a man cannot become a woman, no matter what drugs he takes or what pronouns he uses. He's still a man. He has advantages over women and doesn't belong in women's sports.
Talking with Matt Sharp, Alliance Defending Freedom, Senior Counsel and Vice President of Public Policy. We're talking about the Supreme Court decision announced yesterday upholding bans of states, banning actually transgender athletes from female sports. This came out yesterday. So, Matt, one of the things that I'm hoping for is that discussion of this case will get people to think twice and just stop reacting with the typical verbiage from the left in terms of gender-affirming care. We see this all the time with the pro-life issue where it's reproductive choice, pro-choice, you know, my body, my choice, that kind of thing. The left, the media, of course, have adopted that language. And my hope is that the attention to this case and people discussing it in all kinds of talk shows, including this one, will hopefully open people's eyes regarding the reality of the situation. What do you think?
I completely agree. And I loved with Justice Thomas in his concurrence, he talked about the importance of language. He specifically said to use language that obscures reality is to lie to the public. And that's what a lot of what's happening here with phrases like transgender woman. No, this is a man that identifies as a woman. And when those men are allowed to compete, they are destroying opportunities for women. So just in West Virginia, in one of the cases, BPJ, the male that identifies as a female, beat over 470 women over 1,400 times, taking away two regional championships and a state championship. That's just one male competing in sport. And when we use confusing language and we don't say that this is a male competing, people do get confused. They do get confounded by this. And so I appreciated the court cutting through all of this, using accurate language, and I hope it will inspire others to do as well. We call this out for what it is. It is men taking away and harming young women.
You know, you would think if there are four biological males and boys playing on girls and teams and women's teams, that they would just say, well, let's just all have one big team. Why do we have male sports? Why do we have women's sports? Right?
Yeah. And you know what? We've got that. We have co-ed teams. They're able to have those and have co-ed rules. But the women's category should never be a place that becomes open for men.
So that's why we know this whole thing is political. It's agenda-driven, right?
Absolutely. Like this is an effort to redefine what it means to be male and female. This is an effort to erase what it means to be a woman, God's design for men and women. And that's what we've seen through all of this. And even in the dissents, they're, you know, trying to say, well, you know, if a man takes enough puberty blockers and hormones, he can basically have all the advantages erased. Well, number one, that's completely false. The science shows that even hormones and puberty blockers don't erase the advantage. But more fundamentally, that's dangerous. The fact that we would be telling young kids, you need to go through these puberty blockers and hormones, is barbaric. And what we know is that when you put kids on that path, it leads to these mutilating surgeries that are doing irreparable damage to countless young kids that are deceiving them and pushing them down this dangerous path. On the other side, if a kid that is feeling distressed about their gender and their you know, sex, if you just give them good counseling to say, no, you weren't born in the wrong body, 90% of those kids are going to outgrow it and grow to live healthy adults embracing their biological sex. That's what kids need. And so ultimately in all of these battles for sports and we're ultimately battling for truth and protecting kids from the deception and harm of gender ideology.
Let me read a few more lines from the concurring opinion from Justice Thomas, which was really great, which is, Ed, if you're interested in reading it, folks, you can find it. It's very short. It's less than 2 pages. It's at the end of the decision that was written for the majority by Justice Kavanaugh. First, transgender status is not a suspect class requiring heightened equal protection scrutiny. The class of people who claim transgender status could more accurately be described as people who are experiencing gender dysphoria, which is not a discrete group. Because gender dysphoria is a mutable mental state that is the object of psychiatric treatment, it does not resemble the immutable characteristics on the basis of which our precedents have applied heightened scrutiny, race, sex, or national origin. Instead, gender dysphoria resembles other characteristics on the basis of which legislators may classify with a merely rational basis. So he makes a lot of good points in a very short summary in his concurring opinion. He was very clear in this, Justice Thomas.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think rightfully calling out that gender dysphoria, we don't deny it exists, but there are treatments that can help people overcome that. We've seen countless incredible stories of people like Chloe Cole that initially went down this path, that had the puberty blockers hormones, but through counseling, through help, actually said, no, I am not born in the wrong body. I'm beautifully created as a female. And that shows, like Justice Thomas said, that this is something that, yes, people go through, but they can also overcome through good counseling and treatment. And that's what we want to make sure kids are getting. We don't want to push them further down this path of gender mutilation, of drugs and surgeries that do so much damage to these kids for their entire lives. We want to save them from that. And so Justice Thomas calling that out and recognizing this is not a discrete class. Rather, this is a mental health issue that needs treatment and attention, but not something that should be the basis of writing our laws and especially rewriting our Constitution.
The other point, Matt, and I'd love your opinion on this. I would love for more people to read the opinions. First of all, the concurring opinion of Thomas and, of course, the majority opinion written by Justice Kavanaugh. Pretty quick read. It doesn't take that long. It's, again, not that difficult. I'm not a lawyer, but I went through it fairly quickly. I also hope that they read things on your website, for example, summaries on your website, our stories on EWTN News, and our summaries of these, because we're looking at it from a truthful perspective in terms of male and female, the dignity of the human person. I read one story in the second hour of the show yesterday, right after the decision came down, and reading the language just in one secular media article where it was, shocker, very much to the left and in support of mutilation surgeries and the whole transgender ideology. But they never referred to the transgenders as biological males. It was always transgender women or transgenders. So quickly, have about a minute left. Encourage our listeners to seek honest and truthful sources dealing with reality.
Yeah, we absolutely have to. And I encourage, like you said, read the opinion, because even the court very early on says these are biological men wanting to compete in women's sport. We've got to speak to the truth of this, because when we ignore the truth, it is women that are being harmed. They are losing championships. They are losing opportunities to compete. As Justice Kavanaugh said, every single male that's allowed to compete on a girls' team takes a spot away from a deserving young girl. But on top of that, when we ignore it, women get harmed in so many other ways. Our client in West Virginia, she was threatened with sexual assault. We've got to protect the truth.
Matt, thank you so much. I know it's a very busy time for you, doing a ton of interviews. God bless your work. Continue to speak the truth in love and make a difference. Matt Sharp, Alliance Defending Freedom, Senior Counsel and Vice President of Public Policy. We'll be right back. Father Pavanka from Steubenville, up next. Speaking of truth, an amazing school that does such a great job of raising strong Catholic men and women with the truth of the faith to go out and make a difference in the world, and many of them have been doing that for decades. Father Dave Pavanka is the president of Franciscan University, and he joins us right now, and we're talking this morning, kind of continuing this whole conversation about the truth, especially when we talk about the dignity of the human person, how important it is for colleges, especially higher education, to help students seek and live the truth. Father, great to speak with you. Last time we spoke was on we were sailing the high seas in the Caribbean on the Good News Cruise. How are you? How goes the battle?
I've got my land legs back, and I'm doing great.
Good.
It's very interesting to hear you say that. One of the things that we've been focusing on at the university for the last about 18 months, we just were praying about what the Lord might want us to focus on. So we came up with, we through prayer, live the truth. So if you come to the university, you're going to see that all around. It's kind of, I think, a focus point for us right now, that the truth isn't just an idea. It's not even just a ruling from the courts. It's actually a person. It's a way to live. Mm-hmm. So when you said mm-hmm. that living the truth, it's like, my goodness, that's exactly what we're trying to do here at the university.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. I think these types of stories, and I always tell folks to connect the dots, at least I try to do that myself as well. When we see these big stories in the news, whatever it pertains to, it reflects the truth of who we are, living the truth, the dignity of the human person, male and female. We are made in the Imago Dei, the image and likeness of God. And even if a particular story doesn't mention God or church teaching or natural law, it reflects who we are because of what happens when we don't follow the truth. And I know you do that, expressing this to the students so well at Franciscan.
No, that's absolutely right, that there's something, truth by its nature is attractive. So when you hear something that it just kind of resonates in your heart, and you may not, honestly, Teresa, you may not know exactly what, but you'll hear something, it's like, okay, that's right. There's something with a well-formed conscience, that there's something about that's right, that's beautiful, that's good. And that was my feeling that came out yesterday. The whole decision, the fact that we had to spend so much time talking and debating this, right? But it seemed to be the reasonable, the right result of it. And it's kind of the way our democracy works, obviously. But I think ultimately they got it right.
In a way, though, I kind of see it. I always try to look at the glass as half full and look at it as a Romans 8:28 situation, because we have to get it out there for people to understand what's really going on, because many people may not be aware, depending on whom they're listening to or watching, what's really happening with these issues, because they have been fed over the years certain phrases, as I was talking with the attorney from the Alliance Defending Freedom just a few minutes ago, in terms of gender-affirming care, similar to the whole quote-unquote pro-choice movement. So I think this is really an opportunity for us to explain this in a very Catholic way.
I remember when I was a student, actually, here at the university, there was a woman by the name of Rita Marker, and she worked with the Vatican on life issues, particularly related to euthanasia. And one thing she said that was a maxim that just struck me is that all social engineering is preceded by verbal engineering. So if we can change the words that we use, then the social engineering can come about and flow from that. So the decision, the things you said, right? Affirming care, pro-choice, or she was particularly on the other side, you know, death with dignity, compassionate endings. All of these words, they cloak what's really taking place and what's really going on. So if we can kind of begin to strip that away, we get to see and understand more clearly what the real agendas are.
Yeah. So what was it like for the students to have that very special message in the Holy Father just recently?
Teresa, that's so sweet. It was, well, first off, this is our 50th anniversary of doing conferences, mm-hmm. which is hard to believe, because that means some of the people that went to our first conferences, like teenage conferences, are in their late 60s, early 70s. And it's a blessing. So I actually reached out to the Holy Father in January and asked if he could just say a word or offer something. And honestly, didn't hear anything until the Thursday before the first conference. And he sent, as I'm sure you've seen, it's been read, a 7-minute video. If he would have just said, you know, teenagers, thank you, I'm praying for you, God bless you, the Pope loves you, we would have been thrilled. But he really gave a beautiful catechesis on the Jubilee of St. Francis.
I was going to say that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, specifically mm-hmm. on Francis's greeting, peace and blessing. And what does that mean? What does it mean to have peace for young people? What does
Pace
it mean
to
be present? Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, yep. exactly. Yeah. You, mm-hmm. I mean, you've been in Assisi how many billion times, right?
Right.
And it was just, and the kids were thrilled. I mean, when you turn it, because I said, you know, we've got a welcome from a very special guest. Nobody expected the Pope. One of the kids was really emotional. She said, I can't Aww. Believe the Pope had a message for me. It was just so touching and so thoughtful and generous.
Well, I have a couple of quotes from that beautiful statement. He said, the joy that St. Francis spoke of cannot be found through electronic devices, spending hours in front of a screen, or endlessly scrolling on social media every day, warning that such activities often waste valuable time that could instead be used for prayer, authentic friendships, family life, faith formation, study, or sports. Now, we know the students at Franciscan University of Steubenville are faithful, okay? They seek out your school because they want to grow in their faith and learn more and apply it to their vocations, but we're all human and we all struggle. And so I'm sure this is a message and that they deal with all the time in terms of trying to balance that, right?
No, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And how do you know that each one of us has been born and created with a longing, a hunger, a hole in our heart? And how do we feel that? And where do we look to feel that? And the Holy Father just expressed so beautifully, the only place that can ultimately be satisfied is by Jesus. And we look all kinds of places, but in the midst of that, the only place that we're going to be satisfied is Him.
Yeah, yeah. And I love this line, only the love of God can provide us with true and perfect joy.
Yeah, right. And I don't know, Teresa, if you've been able to actually see the video, but he follows that up with, do you believe that? Like, have you experienced it? And there's honestly, there's such an authenticity when he asks that. It's like, do you know this to be true for you? And it's the question that we always lead and conclude the conferences with, that we know who God is and how he cares for us.
So how was this received when people heard that this, when this video was out there, and it had got great coverage, of course, in the Catholic world, even the secular world as well? I mean, did previous conferences say, gee, we want a message from the Pope? And now is they going to be expecting a message from him every year or something?
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely right. No, everybody was excited about it. They really were. And again, I was touched by Teresa, just his generosity. He could have said a 15-second, but he gave this time and discernment and prayer. And we, you know, you and I both recorded things. To do a 7-minute video takes more than 7 minutes, right?
And so he's the Pope. He's the Pope.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just thrilled. Everybody was thrilled.
And I don't have to say this to you. You're a Franciscan, and we talked about St. Francis when I interviewed on the cruise. But I love the fact that he really took a deep dive into the spirituality of Francis, because so you and I discussed this. So much of Francis is limited by the world, unfortunately, and even some in the church and myself before I really got to know him. We put him in a box, and we don't understand his zeal, his love for the Lord. And I just did an interview when I was in town for the Relics a few months ago, talking to Father Dan over at an American priest. I'm sure you know him. He's stationed in Assisi. He said so many people don't know that Francis preached and taught more on the Eucharist than anything else.
Yes, 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 that's absolutely right. No, the fact that, I mean, it just, again, it speaks to the attentiveness of the Holy Father, that he knew who he was speaking to, he knew his audience, he knew a Franciscan university. I had the opportunity to meet him in March, and I just introduced myself, Father David Bonca from Franciscan, and he said, University of Steubenville. And it was just, he's aware of what the Lord is doing here and what's happening here, and we just could not be more grateful. And I always say, as Father is, that Francis is more than a birdbath. You know, I did that film, Sign of Contradiction, because what I wanted, I had a really interesting experience when I was in Assisi one time. The waiter was from Eastern Europe, and he said he loved Francis. And he went on about how much he loved Francis. And then he followed it up with, but he goes, but I just need to be clear. I'm not into the church. I'm not into being Catholic. I'm not into Jesus. I just love Francis. And I would reflect on that experience. He has no idea who Francis is.
Right.
He has no idea what animates Francis. He has this image of maybe who Francis is, but you can't love Francis and not
love Jesus.
Right.
Not encounter Jesus.
Possible,
but you never
right?
know, Father. I'm sure you're praying for that man, because the more he focuses on Francis, at some point, Jesus is going to come shining through, I'm sure. Father, thank you so much. Great to catch up with you. Enjoy the rest of your summer. I know it's busy with all the wonderful conferences. Father Dave Pavanka, president of Franciscan University at Steubenville, talking about how colleges should, and of course, how Franciscan is helping students seek and live the truth. That's exactly what the Holy Father told them. We'll be right back. Continuing our conversation on truth, the fullness of the truth, of course, and the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. That's what we do every day here at EWTN's Global Catholic Radio Network. Continuing our discussion, as we mentioned, regarding the big Supreme Court decision yesterday. We're going to focus on that the entire first hour, and we're giving Joan Lewis, I forgot to mention that when we had Matt on at the top of the hour, giving Joan Lewis a day off today, because we're going to kind of keep going and really look at this, so the different angles of the story, and then what can we do in terms of speaking up lovingly and making sure we understand the fullness of the truth. Somebody who knows all about this is Mary Pennefather, and she's with Christendom College Sports. She has a stellar background as an amazing young athlete, and she was actually with us live in the second hour of the program several months ago when this big case regarding the bans, the transgender bans, when this big case actually went to the Supreme Court. She joined us live. Mary, it's great to talk to you this morning. First of all, your reaction to what happened yesterday with the Supreme Court. I'm sure you're thrilled.
Yes. Hello, Teresa. I was definitely thrilled, especially it was really exciting going down back in January. I drove the team down to D.C., and we come there, and they're all there, and they're in front of the Supreme Court building, and they are just rallying, and it was really exciting. And so now, like yesterday, to have it finally not be passed was great.
So I'm sure you've been in touch with other fellow female athletes. What's the reaction in the female sports world from what you're hearing from a college level?
I mean, I know my team is really exciting. When I was down there, we teamed with Fierce Athlete, and there was this volleyball player who played at Pittsburgh, and she was there. And she was, you know, she's there, she's supporting. You have all these women athletes there who are giving their testimony, like, this sports team's coming down. And so I think a lot of girls, most girls are happy about this.
You said you wanted to share a special story with us this morning. I'm going to give you that opportunity right now regarding a recent experience you had in relationship to all of this discussion that we're having on this whole issue of transgender ideology.
Yeah, so I got the great opportunity a couple months ago to go to a benefit dinner and hear Riley Gaines speak. She was a keynote speaker. And this was the first time I got to hear her tell her story in person. And she, it was about 200-300 people, and she had the whole room captivated with her story. And she went into swimming against a transgender swimmer and tying with him. And then after that, she tells the story of being in the locker rooms, and she's there, and she's with all her friends, and then she hears this guy's voice in the locker room. And it was, you're in the room, and I mean, I swam for 5 years on my high school team, and it's definitely relatable. And so just being in the room, and it was, the other thing too that was interesting about that is the people in the crowd, they were either above 60 or in their late teens or early 20s. So I really have hope for my generation. And Noah Coffin was also there. He's the largest leader of the team, Turning Point in USA, and he gave a great speech. And so I just have hope for the new generations coming up about just conservatism and fighting for women in their sports.
And so how do you hope to go forward with your own experience as a female athlete? What are you looking forward to once you graduate? What are your goals?
Well, I definitely want to play. I know the NCAA just passed one more year, their fifth year of eligibility for all NCAA players. So I'm looking to play one more year, which would be really exciting. But, yeah, just because Title IX, we got this great thing for women, and then we take a step back, and then now we're fighting it for it again. We have people like Riley Gaines, who is just great. And, I mean, just being at the court building in January, it was great to see all these young women athletes who, I mean, I've played many sports, I've been around the athletic world, and just to see these girls, and girls when they're competitive, they like step up to the plate and they fight. And I mean, I have five sisters and we're all super competitive. So It's kind of competing on this legal level now, which is interesting. And I mean, so far, I mean, we won yesterday, so it's a good thing for the future.
Yeah, it's a big win. We just had one of the attorneys, a top attorney from the Alliance Defending Freedom at the top of the hour, and this really does set precedent. And there are other states that don't have the bans in place, and they said that's going to be the next goal of theirs, is to go out there and make sure these other states protect women's sports as well. Do you think, And I'm asking all my guests this morning, Mary, do you think that just having this in the news and coming from someplace as high as the Supreme Court, even though I can't believe that something like this actually made it that far, considering how ridiculous this whole situation is, but do you think that putting it out there in a national and international framework of discussion, that this will hopefully help people understand what's really going on behind this horrible agenda?
Yes, I definitely think, especially being at the Supreme Court building, this will definitely help it. And just, again, with like the younger crowd realizing what is truth, a man can't turn, like, become a woman just when he wants to. And then, I mean, this is what cheating is. It's just an unfair advantage. So if you have, and at the Supreme Court building, all these girls were giving the testimonies, how they lost, how they, like, especially on the track and field race, if he came in second when they could have easily gotten first if it's the transgender hadn't won. So I definitely hope that people will start to realize that this is craziness.
What is it like to have to worry about something like that? You're already working so hard as an athlete, really perfecting and building up your strength and practicing, and then hearing Riley's story and then knowing other women who've had those challenges. What does that feel like, thinking about something like that, that you might have to go up against a man?
Well, now, I mean, especially after hearing Riley's story, and she made a point about you have to be the one to do something. It can't be your parents. I mean, it's dangerous, like, having men in a woman's locker room, but you have to be the one to stand up. And definitely going forward, I would know not. I would just leave. I mean, I would rather not participate in a sport rather than play against a man, just kind of out of principle. So,
well, that night, yeah. I think you're putting yourself in physically in harm's way, so you have your health to think about as well. All right, so here's a question for you, my dear. Since your course of study is political science and economics, do you see yourself maybe running for office someday, given how much you have been exposed now to the political process, being down in Washington at the Supreme Court, doing many radio interviews and being called upon as an expert because of your knowledge of sports and what young women deal with in this day and age? Are you thinking maybe of doing something in the public square?
I'm definitely thinking about it because I really enjoy the political science and economics. But, yeah, I mean, now coming into my early 20s and just realizing that my generation is kind of taking the lead, especially with Noah Coffin, just hearing him speak, and he's younger than me, he's in high school, and he's so articulate and he's really put together, and he's training all these Team USA people, so Turning Point, excuse me. And, yeah, so now it's kind of my time, and maybe one day that will lead me to office. I don't know where God will take me next, but very, very possible.
Well, you got my vote. If I could vote for you, if you were in my state, I'd vote for you.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations, my dear. God bless you, and thanks for being such a courageous witness. And it was so great to talk to you at the Supreme Court a few months ago. And I like it even better, though, this morning to talk to you after this victory. Mary Pennefeather from Christian in College. And a huge, huge history in women's sports, as you just heard, in swimming and basketball, an award winner. And she's been very lovingly outspoken about the situation with men playing in women's sports. Mary, thank you so much. God bless you. We continue the conversation with Mary Rice Hansen, Director of the Person and Identity Project at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, or EPPC. More on this Supreme Court decision. Stay tuned. Welcome back, Catholic Connection. Mary Rice Hansen is with us. You know her well from her great projects, not only with EWTN, of course, but also with the Person and Identity Project at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, or EPPC, and Director of the Person and Identity Project at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, more specifically. Mary, great to have you back on. So I know
Thanks
that
so
it was a big decision. It was a very, very strong ruling for women's sports and for the truth of who we are, made in the image and likeness of God. You're saying, though, that it still leaves a lot of room in other states that don't have bans. What are you thinking? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me on and for addressing this. I mean, it's a strong opinion and a great win as far as it goes. And there are a lot of really wonderful things about it. Just saying that Title IX is very clear. You are permitted to make sex-based distinctions in the athletic context. And that's important because after the Bostock decision, the Biden administration and many people in the states who were pushing progressive transgender policies sought to say that the Bostock decision justified gender identity as the basis for distinctions in sports, for example, just across the board. In other words, they wanted to apply Bostock across the board to sports. And so the court really clipped their wings, saying Bostock does not apply. This is clearly under Title IX. We know that sex distinctions are permitted and that the sex distinctions envisioned by Title IX are based on sex. just the immutable differences between males and females. So that's wonderful. But what it said was states then are permitted to have these distinctions where they reserve female sports for females only based on sex as a biological matter. But it didn't say that as a matter of fairness or safety, states must do that. So I think we're going to continue to see some litigation on that basis because the other side is not waving a white flag of surrender.
Well, I'm reading, this is from Justice Thomas's concurring opinion. Mm-hmm. The court correctly holds that neither Title IX nor the Equal Protection Clause prohibits states from offering sex-separated mm-hmm. athletics. The exons say a man does not have a legal right to compete against women just because he believes that he is a woman. I know they're not going to be waving the white flag, but isn't this going to be a challenge for them given the Supreme Court decision?
Sure, sure, it is. But what we've seen in other contexts, for example, the Supreme Court's very strong ruling in Scrimeti or in Mahmood was the case that said parents have the right to opt their kids out, to receive notice when there's LGBTQ content and to opt their kids out. The states that have already committed themselves ideologically to promoting this are not going quietly into the night. They are fighting this tooth and nail. They expect to be litigated. In other words, they're trying to stay the course because they hope in a political sense that they'll either pack the court and change some of these rulings or that you're going to get a different administration in there that's going to change regs, et cetera. So even though we can point to the law now, what's been clarified by the Supreme Court, it doesn't mean the other side says, okay, you're right, that's what we're going to do, unfortunately.
Well, when I was speaking with Matt Sharp from Alliance Defending Freedom at the mm-hmm. top of the hour, he was discussing the fact that they were actually hoping the other side, in terms of the Supreme Court case, that they wouldn't have to take this all the way to the Supreme Court because it is so difficult, you know, to explain in terms of a lack of total truth and reality and common sense. And that they were basically saying the one man who identified as mm-hmm. a woman in the one case, that he was no longer playing sports. So, you know, you had to hold mm-hmm. that whole line. So that kind of line of thinking make me think at least hopeful that they realize that this is an uphill battle once they do get to a major court.
Yeah, and I think where we're on solid ground is really Title IX, because even the other side was not contesting that Title IX permits these distinctions based on sex. What they were trying to do was carve out an exception when you've got a male who has taken puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones. They're saying, well, the reasons that we have permitted this kind of a sex-based classification no longer apply because you don't have a threat in terms of competitiveness or safety. And the court really brushed that aside and said, you know, the ruling just says you can make that or the statute and the regs make clear you can make these sex-based distinctions, and it has no mm-hmm. requirement to say we've got to do a case-by-case evaluation, which is basically what the other side was arguing. Now, the problem with the equal protection questions, I think that's still going to be litigated in other contexts, in other ways, perhaps with facts that they think are better suited. But again, you know, we take the win for mm-hmm. what it is. Permitting, states are permitted to do this. So hopefully on the state level, we're going to see increased activism with people trying to pass laws that specifically restrict female sports, for example, to females only. The other high point I thought of this decision compared to last year's decisions on transgender questions is that the court seems to be getting much more precise in its language. And,
yes,
and certainly
yes.
Justice Thomas mm-hmm. has been. But even
Justice Thomas and Kavanaugh as well, because in every mm-hmm. single line, it was biological males or boys.
Yep.
They weren't buying into the language.
Right. And that's important because a year ago, many of even the conservative justices were using phrases like transgender athletes, transgender women, transgender girls, as if this is some other category of personhood that must be treated differently. So it's much clearer the court sort of brushed aside some of those cobwebs and language obfuscations and said, let's be clear, we're talking about biological males. And as Justice Thomas said, regardless of how they identify, they're biological males. And that's the basis for this sex classification, and the court's upholding that.
How would you like to see this discussed and explained in Catholic circles in addition to programs such as this, Mary?
Yeah, I think it's important for the church to be very strong in and clear about what's true. And the and again, that was the benefit of this case. What's true is the court said, recognized. They didn't make something true. They recognized the truth that there are immutable differences between males and females, and that the fact that a person feels a different way or self-identifies as someone else does not change that reality. And so using reality-based language is really important for the church as well, because it's not a, it's a false compassion when we sort of adopt the language of those who are rejecting reality, as if that's a way to meet them where they are. It just confuses the issue. We're male, we're female, we can have compassion for someone who is experiencing struggles or confusion, but it doesn't change the facts on the ground, the reality. And ultimately, love is helping someone move towards what is truly good for them, which is always based in truth.
This is, I think, an opportunity for us, though, is it not? Because if we understand the church teaching, we know how beautiful it is to, as you just said, to approach people and helping them come to the point where you need to look at reality.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Teresa, it's a little bit troubling that we've seen in recent months some increased pressure from the Catholic left to woo some bishops, to make the case that the people who, as they would say, are transgender, we would say they are male or female, they identify or feel this way, but making, trying to make this case that the church needs to listen to these people and to validate their reality. And we can listen to people, but there's no love, there's no compassion in validating confusion or a lie. So I think it's especially perhaps helpful to the church at this moment to see that, you know, the wider world is moving towards recognizing reality, and the church has always done that. So let's not go backwards. Let's not confuse things by saying that it must be somehow more compassionate and charitable to muddy the language and to treat people as someone they're not, and because it's just not true, and ultimately it's not loving.
No, it's not loving. And if we're talking about truth and living the Catholic truth, I mean, it's a reality of a situation. It's the whole basis of church teaching in terms of marriage and beginning to the end. And so it really is ridiculous and very harmful to do anything like that, especially within the church. I mean, the USCCB has been very strong in this, though. They did put out a statement right prior to this decision. And so I'm very optimistic and hopeful there. And again, I think it's important for deacons and priests to preach about this and to help people understand and to get away from the language of the left, which is totally accepted. I'm sure you read many of the news articles yesterday. I used one from USA Today. Never once did they mention biological males. Not once.
Right. Right, because they want to pretend that the true distinctions among people are really based on self-determined, quote, gender identity. In other words, your inner sense of who you are, which is completely subjective, not grounded in reality, can change from moment to moment, is unprovable. You know, it's just ridiculous. But you're right, the headlines were framed that way, as if these decisions, quote, banned transgender athletes or transgender girls, when there's no ban. It's just the decisions are simply clarifying that it's perfectly appropriate to make distinctions based on sex. We know what sex is. There's an immutable difference between males and females, and for the law to recognize that is a good thing. It's justified. The government has an interest in protecting fairness and safety. So we can't concede on the language, but rather, as you say, there's an opportunity here. You know, we should say, if even the secular world is and the courts, which are not motivated by anything theological truth, if even they are saying, look, here's the reality, we should be even more bold to lean into this moment and say, let's speak to that reality. Let's truly help people who are struggling with confusion, but not by blasting a fog machine that clouds their vision, by using clear language and encouraging them to move towards the truth, because that's really where their happiness is going to lie.
Amen. One of the stories even referred to one of the plaintiffs as a transgender woman assigned as a male at birth.
Right, right.
This was in a news story. This was not in an opinion piece, Mayor. This was in a news story.
No person is assigned a sex at birth. You are.
I know.
From the moment of conception. And so again, you know, as Catholics, we should use very clear language. What's the reality here? And not apologize for that.
Ridiculous. It drives me crazy. It gets my Italian up. I know you have some Italian in you too, so I'm sure yours was rising reading some of those stories. All right, so what can we expect from the wonderful project that you're working on, Identity Project at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, in terms of this issue and the other issues on which you concentrate so well?
Yeah, you know, we've been doing more work just really to help schools and dioceses to make sure that they are using appropriate language. I think that's one of the critical things, because language brings clarity and just being very clear. So anyone who's interested, they can come to personidentity.com. We have a leadership toolkit for people who are in diocesan or parish positions or heads of schools or things like that that can be helpful. But I think to the average Catholic, it's let's speak the truth and let's celebrate the fact that the law is recognizing this. This is a good thing, and we can celebrate that.
Amen. Mary, thanks so much. Appreciate your great work. Our guest, Mary Rice Hansen, director of the Person and Identity Project at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. One more time, Mary, with the link for folks if they want more information.
Yeah, personandidentity.com.
Well, you're great. Thanks for spending the time with us. Appreciate it. I know you're really busy right now. Great discussion from all of our guests, Father Dave Pavanka, Matt Sharp from Alliance Defending Freedom, Mary Pennefeather, and Mary Rice Hansen. And we'll be right back to let you know what's coming up, hour number two on EWTN's Radio Extra. Stay tuned. Thank you so much for tuning in to Catholic Connection on a Wednesday. You are listening to EWTN's Global Catholic Radio Network, of course, your pro-life radio network, and we bring you the truth of the Catholic faith and the world because it's universal. Catholic teaching is not just for Catholics. It's truth, because truth is real for everyone, okay? So we'll continue our conversation on a truth, and we will be talking with Dr. Adam Tate all about Catholics and the founding of the United States of America. I don't know if you've seen some of the fun videos that are out there on social media, on YouTube, and on various news websites and news feeds, all about people visiting the United States who have been brainwashed by their own admission by leftist media in Europe. Video after video after video apologizing for having a very bad opinion of the United States prior to coming here for World Cup-related activities. It is really very encouraging to see what they're saying about the people, about the beauty of the country, about the faith of the people even. And it's just very encouraging. And so I think it'd be kind of cool. I don't want to encourage people to hang out on social media ever, but if you do pick up your phone and happen to see some of those videos, some of them are really sweet. You see these English guys who are trying to learn country line dancing down in Texas, or sitting in a fast food restaurant and loving some of our fast food. It's just very sweet. But most of all, talking about the people and the beauty and the kindness of the country. And they say, you know what? We're sorry. We were totally, totally brainwashed by the media. Shocker. Not really. Talking about America when we continue. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is a Wednesday morning, hour number two of Catholic Connection here on a Wednesday, July 1st. Hope July is going well for you so far, and looking forward to our discussion this morning. We're going to be talking about the history of American Catholicism as we celebrate the 250th anniversary of our nation's founding. We're going to be talking with Dr. Adam Tate. That will be exciting. He provided brief answers to many questions that he's been speaking on in terms of the country and the connection to Catholicism. So it's going to be very, very interesting. He has a book, Catholics Lost Cause, South Carolina Catholics in the American South, 1820 to 1861. It's an older publication of the book, but it certainly will be interesting to talk to him about the connection between Catholics and the United States of America. So look forward to talking to Dr. Adam Tate when he joins us shortly. He'll be with us about 10:28 Eastern Time, just in case if you're listening in the Eastern Time Zone. We're also going to have the news for you as well, and there's a lot of breaking news out of Rome and all kinds of different things going on in the world. We'll have an update on the earthquake for you as well, so I want you to keep that in mind. Let's take a look at the weather before we get into the news this morning. Right now, it's about 1 minute past the hour, but the National Weather Service is saying that dangerous heat in the central and eastern U.S. will continue, and then that is going to bring about severe thunderstorms in the central part of the country. And we're still looking at some critical fire weather in the Four Corners. Now, there's dangerous record-breaking heat that's going to intensify across most of the central and eastern U.S. this week. And the indexes will likely exceed 100 degrees. Severe thunderstorms are forecast across parts of the upper Midwest into the Great Lakes and Northeast and the central high plains. And then we have critical fire weather conditions that will continue across portions of the Four Corners and the Great Basin. So that is a look at the forecast and the rundown for hour number two. We've got a lot of news to get through, so let's get started. You are listening to hour number two of Catholic Connection here on EWTN Radio Extra. Let's get started at 10:02 Eastern Time on EWTN Radio Extra. Well, as we've been discussing in the first hour of the program this morning, the Supreme Court is upholding bans on biological men in girls and women's sports in both Idaho and West Virginia. Those are where the two cases were based. Independent Women's Forum Ambassador Peyton McNabb celebrating the Supreme Court decision.
There's a lot of eyes on this. Across the country, there's families, there's parents, and there's coaches and daughters who are watching this decision being made. And I'm just so thankful that they get to understand that they are protected.
Biological males and boys had challenged the bans, arguing the bans violated their 14th Amendment equal protection guarantee. The court holding that West Virginia did not violate Title IX, which bars educational programs that receive federal funding from discriminating based on sex. In its decision, the court also said the two states did not violate the 14th Amendment by maintaining female sports teams for biological females. More than two dozen states currently have bans on men or boys playing in female sports. Meanwhile, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas writing that transgender language is a lie to the public. He said this in a Tuesday concurring opinion, again concurring with that ruling that blocks athletes who were assigned to the male... Here we go again. I forgot to edit this, but this is what I'm talking about. I mentioned this with Mary Rice Hassan earlier. Men playing in women's sports from competing against biological women. Men and boys with gender dysphoria, he said, are not women or girls, even if they believe that they are. Sex is an immutable biological characteristic. And also, boys and girls are the terms that correspond to adults and children of each sex. To use language to obscure reality, to show indifference regarding the truth, is to lie to the public and cease to treat our fellow citizens as equals, he said. Another big story we're following for you this morning, a breakaway Catholic group is defying the Vatican by ordaining bishops. The Seamless Garment of Christ, Vatican News reports, which Pope Leo XIV had urged in a heartfelt letter on June 29th not to tear apart, has now, in the Vatican's view, been torn. It happened this morning in Switzerland, the headquarters of the Priestly Society of St. Pius X, consecrating four new bishops without a papal mandate. The Society is a group of Catholic traditionalists with about 600,000 followers worldwide. It was founded in 1970 by fundamentalist Catholics who were strongly opposed to reforms imposed by the Vatican in the 1960s. Earlier this week, Pope Leo writing a letter to the Society begging them not to ordain the bishops. The Pope wrote, "To tear the seamless garment of Christ is a sin of extreme gravity." Today, the breakaway group ordaining again four bishops, more specifically two French, one Swiss, and one American. And the Supreme Court is striking down President Trump's effort to end birthright citizenship. Former federal prosecutor Brett Tolman reacted to the high court's decision.
We have to be a serious country in this day and age to protect this country from individuals that would come in and compromise it. That could have been what happened here.
The court ruled Trump's executive order to eliminate the 14th Amendment's guarantee that those born in the U.S. are American citizens was unlawful. The case came from a lawsuit filed by the ACLU in New Hampshire last year. Trump's executive order was never in effect after courts across the country blocked it from being implemented. And it's still a race against time in Venezuela as aftershocks complicate rescue efforts almost a week after devastating back-to-back earthquakes. Ana Vanessa Herrera reports from Caracas, where rescuers from Mexico have joined local residents in combing through what's left of a toppled apartment building.
Some of the Mexican crew have been telling me that they are not going to stop until this is absolutely over, until they are sure there is no way they're going to find anyone alive there.
The death toll has now risen to more than 1,700. A 4.6 magnitude aftershock was reported by the U.S. Geological Survey on Monday on the Venezuelan coast. Meanwhile, authorities say they have also received support from more than 24 countries. More than 30,000 people are participating in the rescue efforts. U.S. Special Envoy Stephen Witkoff and President Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner are in Qatar for peace negotiations with Iran, but they won't be speaking directly with any Iranians. Nick Harper reports that instead, they're meeting with Pakistani and Qatar mediators.
So far, Iran is very much taking a hands-off approach and saying that it will not engage in direct negotiations, and that's why we've got the Qataris as the mediators in between. But of course, that in itself will slow up any real progress that they hope to achieve during these 60 days.
And a spokesman for Qatar's foreign ministry says no direct talks again between the U.S. and Iran are planned at this point. This after President Trump and the White House said the Iranians had requested a high-level meeting. Iran has said its officials will be in Qatar today for meetings and technical talks with mediators on the implementation of a recently signed memorandum of understanding with the U.S., which set a 60-day negotiation window. Mark Mayfield fills us in as President Trump is announcing that he will gather Republicans in Texas for a midterm convention as the party works to maintain control of Congress.
Scheduled for September 9th and 10th in Dallas, the event is described in his Truth Social post as a truly historic event. Trump said he expects Republicans to celebrate what he calls the Great American Comeback, highlighting tax cuts, border security, and lower costs, despite inflation reaching its highest level in more than 3 years. He added that the convention will feature hardworking Americans, including innovators, entrepreneurs, manufacturers, first responders, and job creators. The Republican National Committee previously approved a rule change allowing a midterm year convention, breaking from the tradition of holding such events only during the presidential election cycles. I'm Mark Mayfield.
A major heat dome is impacting millions, as you heard in the weather forecast we gave you just a few minutes ago. This week, it's going to be covering the eastern half of the country. Frank Velez is the director of the Chicago Office of Emergency Management.
An extreme warning, heat warning, has been issued by the National Weather Center. Dangerous heat and humidity levels are expected throughout the week.
The heat dome is forecast to last well into the big 4th of July weekend. That dome expanding and intensifying today in cities including Philadelphia, New York, Washington, and more could hit above 100 degrees. Meanwhile, the mega heat dome could also be sparking some tropical storm development near the southern U.S. in the Atlantic and the Gulf. And Scott Carr tells us dozens of new state laws. Oops, we already had that story. We'll skip that one. Meanwhile, a new report says three ransom notes in the Nancy Guthrie case were all fake. An FBI source telling Reuters yesterday that after assessing the authenticity of the notes, they determined that none of them are genuine. Two ransom notes were reported in early February, just days after the 84-year-old mother of Today Show host Savannah Guthrie disappeared from her southern Arizona home. The first one demanded millions in cryptocurrency. The second claimed she had died. The FBI reportedly concluding that whoever wrote the notes did not know Guthrie's whereabouts. It is said that a third note sent last month to TMZ was also fake. Matt Madison tells us a number of job openings, well, they held steady in May.
The Labor Department says 7.6 million jobs were available, which is little changed from April. The job openings and labor survey shows vacancies for the month were up just 9,000, which is higher than analysts expected. The number of job openings increased in wholesale trade, while healthcare and social assistance saw the biggest declines. Hirings, layoffs, and quits were little changed in May. I'm at Mattinson.
Consumer confidence edging higher in June. The Conference Board reporting its headline confidence index rising 0.6 of a point from May's downwardly revised reading. The board's chief economist said falling oil prices provided some relief to consumer inflation fears in June. Looking ahead, buying plans for big ticket items improved slightly with expectations for home buying and auto purchases, both trending a little bit higher for the next 6 months. And Sarah Lee Kessler tells us dementia costs in our country are expected to surpass $800 billion, and that'll happen this year.
The Alzheimer's Association, in a new study, found that skyrocketing costs are falling mostly on unpaid caregivers. Family members bear three times the expense, not the government. Over 5 million Americans are living with dementia, and another 5 are caring for them without pay. The study also showed quality of life losses are the biggest driver of dementia's total burden. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
NASA planning a daring mission aimed at preventing a space telescope from falling to Earth. Tom Costello tells us a startup called Catalyst Space will try to save the 22-year-old Swiss observatory, which is 210 miles above Earth, but is being pulled back to the planet.
Using a Pegasus rocket dropped from a high-flying plane over the Pacific. Inside that rocket, a robot named Link will emerge, then literally grab and push the Swift telescope away from a certain depth.
If that telescope is not rescued by October, it will be too late. Meanwhile, NASA is preparing to launch a new deep space telescope. That will happen later next month. The Nancy Grace Roman telescope, named for the agency's first chief astronomer, will have a field of view of 100 times greater than that of the Hubble telescope. And Liz Rotoballi reports the latest social trend in New York City is meeting up with people to lie down and do nothing.
The New York Post reports 500 people have signed up for Club Rest Stop, a new event series made for people feeling tired and burnt out. Brooklyn's Malia Simone created the event and hosted its latest edition this past Sunday in Central Park. Simone hopes to highlight different methods of rest and relaxation in the city that never sleeps. She also added, with the growth of artificial intelligence, rest is the way to, quote, remain human in an automated world. In New York, I'm Lizzie Radabali.
And in Italy, we call that the dolce far niente, la dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing. Think about how stressed we must be, how busy we must be if this is actually taking off, having rest clubs around the country. Isn't that interesting? It is a Wednesday morning, middle of the week, and it is July 1st. Happy July. Happy early 4th of July to you. We'll be talking more about Catholics and our wonderful country when we continue a little bit at the bottom of the hour. More Catholic Connection coming your way. Again, it's a Wednesday morning, July 1st. We appreciate your listenership. Stay tuned. Catholic Connection on a Wednesday morning, and we're so glad that Joni, as I call her, could join us today in the second hour of the program. Normally, of course, she is always a main feature of hour number one of Catholic Connection on Wednesdays, where she gives us her Joan's Rome, her perspective from all things Vatican, all things Holy Father. Busy, busy time right now, my dear, and I know for you we appreciate it because you're heading to the States tomorrow, right, for 4th of July.
4th of July. I've not been in the U.S. for July 4th for like 20 years. So,
how exciting.
I know. This is very, very exciting. And I'll be with some friends, really terrific friends, in a place I've never been, and that's Knoxville, Tennessee.
So it's
going to be very exciting. They were just here in Rome, and they said to me, this is, off the cuff, oh, Joe, I said how much I'd love to be in America for $250. And, Joan, you got a place to stay in Knoxville. So they kept pressing, and then they went home, and I said, you know what, guys, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. Got online and made the reservation, so tomorrow will be my flight to Knoxville, you know. And it's going to be very exciting. But we'll do something next week on this show, and sure. I'll be writing a few lines about happenings in the Vatican. But I think anybody who has been following the Vatican, the Pope, et cetera, knows that today was, for people in the Roman Catholic Church, a very difficult day. The SSPX, the Society of Pius X, which is actually, you know, it's a traditional Catholic priestly society, but it is canonically irregular within the Catholic Church. And they had said many, many months ago that they were going to ordain 4 bishops on July 1st. And the thing is, of the original 4 bishops in this society, only 2 are still alive, and only a bishop can confer episcopacy on a priest. So if they no longer had bishops, this is why they want to do it. They want to assure the future of the SSPX. But there's just one little problem with this, one huge problem. Nobody in the Roman Catholic Church, in the Catholic Church, can be ordained a bishop without a mandate from the Pope. And so they do not have, and we know from a very beautiful letter that Pope Leo wrote. It was published yesterday, June 30th, but it was sent to the Society on the 29th. And in very loving, caring terms, the Pope pleaded with them to turn back from doing something which would be schismatic and thus incur automatic excommunication. Yeah. So that's a big thing. We're not talking about 10,000-15,000 people. We are talking about 600,000 people throughout the world, and that's not any small number. So, but the question at this point, and we haven't had a statement from Rome. We had the Pope's letter, so we know that, but we haven't had anything from the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith or elsewhere letting us know. In the past, 1988, when the first 4 SSPX bishops were consecrated, then the Pope, the bishops doing the consecrating and those receiving it were excommunicated. But it sounded like from Pope Leo's letter that we all read yesterday, it sounds like everyone else would, the priests and the faithful of this society would also incur excommunication. So more or less, we are waiting for some kind of a clarification on that. I mean, the priests of the SSPX had to know. If I'm Joan in Rome and you're Teresa and whoever's listening, if we knew about this, then of course the priest and the lay faithful had to. If anybody objected, hopefully they told their superior general. But the whole thing today that was so astonishing, Teresa, was that when the 4 ordinands were asked if they had the apostolic blessing, they answered yes. And of course, they didn't. So they never got apostolic mandate, meaning the papal mandate. And so for them to say that was obviously a... let's be nice and call it a misstatement. But then the worrisome thing were the words of the Superior General, Davide Pagliarani, who gave a brief address in which he said, "We are prepared to pay any price," but he said, "We consider any penalties," and I just mentioned excommunication, "we consider that any penalties or censures imposed for this act will have no value whatsoever." And that may have been just to tranquilize his, you know, 600,000 followers throughout the world. But, Teresa, it's so serious. The thing is, with excommunication, it's not something you feel, like you break a bone or something. It's not a physical thing. It means you can't participate. You're out of communion with the church.
I do think, though, that the Holy Father's statements were so strong and so heartfelt. I mean, he was saying that you are basically you're tearing apart the church. This is a schism. The words he used, nobody needs to guess or surmise or infer anything. It's very clear. And he also, when talking about the sacraments, he warned these leaders, so-called leaders, that look, you are what you are doing is affecting all these people in terms of the ability to legitimately receive the sacraments. So he's saying these sacraments are not legit. He's putting it out there.
Oh, Teresa, you could almost picture Pope Leo with tears in his eyes as he was writing this. That's how beautiful and caring it was. Please, please, like you said, don't do this. And he did stress this, quote, spiritual good of the faithful, because this act you're about to undertake would deprive them of the licit and in some cases even valid reception of the sacraments which they love and seek for their sanctification. So you're certainly spot on by pointing that out. And tearing the seamless garment of Christ is a sin of extreme gravity. And then, you know, the Superior General of SSPX wrote back to the Pope after just hours. I'm sure he they got the letter on the 29th of June, and he wrote back, and it was published yesterday, and he used many of the same phrases, but, you know, like the garment of Christ, the seamless garment of Christ. So, but I don't have any doubt about a lot of the faithful or priests are saying they love the church.
Right.
But the thing is, there's a word at the end of their sentence, which is in capital letters, but. I love the church, but. Because the thing is, one of the major features of the SSPX is refusing so many elements of Vatican Council II. And the changes in the liturgy, I mean, they don't recognize what you and I and our listeners call the Novus Ordo. They don't recognize that at all. They only recognize the traditional Latin Mass. So the problem that you're not going to obey, that you're going to go ahead with something without the required papal mandate, and it's just, I'm trying to picture my soul in these circumstances. But
no.
Teresa, I want to think, you know, as a good Christian and with love for fellow Christians, that there will be some arrangement made for those who are not happy with the fact that they're all excommunicated. There's going to have to be a path back to the church. It's not an easy one, according to canon law. But there has to be
But the Pope is doing what he needs to do to be very loving and very clear in this, and to make it very direct as to what's going on and how serious. And so then, because he has to answer to God as a vicar of Christ, and he's and he's doing it very well. Joni, we're out of time, but I thank you again for reworking your schedule and joining us in the second hour of the program. I wish you safe travels, my dear. Have a great Fourth of July weekend. Post lots of great stuff on the website, and we'll talk to you, God willing, from the USA next week, our very own Joan Lewis.
You got that right. Happy July 4th.
God bless America. We'll be right back. Make sure you tune in to EW10 Live with Father Mitch Pacwa, and our guest is going to be on tonight, so we get kind of a preview of his wonderful discussion I'm sure he'll be having with Father Mitch, all about America the Beautiful, and more specifically the Catholic connection, pun intended, especially when we look at the founding of our nation, the colonial states, and the Catholic interest in religious liberty, even though they were a small minority. And Professor Tate, thank you so much. Adam Tate, we appreciate you. Prominent, of course, professor in history at Clayton State University, serving as chair of the Department of Humanities, and you've been a part of the university for many, many years. And so you're in town at EW10. Is this your first time to the studios?
It is not, but first time in the studios, not on the campus here.
Okay, great. And going to be on with Father Mitch tonight, and obviously what a great topic for this week. First of all, let me just ask you personally, because I mentioned as I wrapped up the first hour of my program this morning how excited I am to see so many people visiting the United States and realizing the beauty of our country, the faith, and how people love their freedom. There was one video, I don't know if you saw it, at a soccer for one of the World Cup games, obviously, where apparently the mic went out for the vocalist who was supposed to sing the national anthem, and the whole place sang it a cappella.
Wow.
And the people were like just in tears, the people from other countries and Americans as well. What does it mean to you, this anniversary, first of all?
Well, first of all, it's a great time. I remember being very young at the bicentennial, since I spent a lot of my life studying American history, of course, this is a very, it's like a momentous time, something to remember and to be thankful for the freedoms that we have.
Do most of us as Catholics, you think, understand the involvement that Catholics had in religious liberty in developing this country?
Right. I probably not. So I think that one of the problems is that Catholics in the colonial period, of course, are a very small minority of the colonial population in what becomes the United States in the 13 colonies. Probably in 1776, we don't have exact numbers, but the best estimate, it's about 1% of the population, so about 20,000 Catholics. Well, within 70 years, thanks to immigration in the 1830s, 1840s, and 1850s, primarily from Irish and Germans coming over, all of a sudden, Catholics are millions of people in the nation, and for many Catholics, that's who maybe we live in different parts of the United States. Catholicism may be smaller in some areas than others, for certain. But it's very common to see a Catholic church in a town or meet other Catholics around the country. But in the colonial period, that was not necessarily true. So one of the things that's this stems in part from the English Reformation, where Catholicism was essentially banned. And so many of the colonies had banned Catholics from participation in public life, or even banned priests from coming to colonies. So in other words, in the colonial period, there is an established church. The Church of England is established in many of the colonies, not all of them, but many of them. And what that meant was that the Church of England was the official tax-supported church, and that it would also had protection of law. There were legal penalties if you did not attend or you did not do certain things, right? So there were laws that prohibited Catholics from participating in life, in American life. So the colony that there were three colonies that had some Catholic population. Maryland, of course, is the most famous, right? Because the Maryland colony, when it's founded in the 1630s, has a Catholic who is the proprietor of the colony, who's leading the colony. But Catholics never form more than about 15% of Maryland's population. So there's some Catholics in Pennsylvania, there's some in New York as well, even though they suffer under legal penalties. So what happens in the 18th century, right? So this is the century of when the American Revolution comes, is that the British are trying to unite their colonies more strongly. And so they devote resources to promoting Anglicanism in the colony, sending missionaries, also building Anglican churches in some of the colonies and such. And, they find many what they called dissenters in the 18th century. So these are people who were not members of the Church of England. Mm-hmm. Baptists, Quakers, and Catholics would be considered dissenters, if you will, in the 18th century. And so England wants to kind of unify its colonies a little bit more culturally. And so they're spending money trying to solidify or bring more people into the church. So they find many what they called unchurched people who didn't have a church affiliation, right? So they're trying to evangelize, they're trying to bring people into the churches. But at the same time, there is this huge, what one historian has called a clash of civilizations, where England or Great Britain is fighting France and Spain for control of the colonial world. They fight a number of different wars. And religion is a part of this, right? Because France and Spain are Catholic powers, and, well, England is not. And so Catholics in the 18th century find themselves under the gun, so to speak, because not only are they a tiny minority and they have legal restrictions on their behavior, on even going to mass, but they're also in this political environment where to be British meant to be Protestant. And so many of them were in the colonies, obviously, were from British descent, although there's a number of Irish as well, even in the colonial period. But they're very small, right? And so what ends up happening is, as the revolution comes in 1775, violence breaks out. Catholics have to make a choice. Are they going to stay with, say, loyal to the king, or are they going to join in this new experiment, this new revolution, perhaps for independence? Perhaps this might change the situation that they find themselves in. Perhaps they might be able to worship freely, right? So this is part of the calculation. What we know is that Catholics overwhelmingly tended to support the revolution. So from the sources that we have, right, that in areas of Maryland where Catholic populations were concentrated, there were a couple of counties that were maybe like a third of the population is Catholic. In these counties, Catholics support the American cause over 70%, right? So this is a very, vigorous support of the revolution. And one of the things that we find is that Catholics, especially the ones who are literate and who had were participating in public life in some way, like Charles Carroll, for example, who is the only Catholic signer of the Declaration of Independence, they see this moment as a moment where Americans can support religious freedom, that Catholics can actually come into public and actually worship freely, and that they won't suffer penalties for that. And so I think that one of the things that's very interesting is if we look at John Carroll, the first bishop who's appointed in the United States in 1789, he supports religious freedom, but not in a way where we think of indifferentism, where we don't really care. Like, so you can be this, you can be that. Well, I don't really care what you are, right? No, he says that religious freedom is going to allow him to make the case for Catholicism publicly, right, without being persecuted.
Let's pick this up after the other side of the break. Dr. Adam Tate is with us talking about Catholics, religious liberty, and the start of our country. We'll be right back. Having a fascinating conversation with our guest, Dr. Adam Tate from Clayton State University. And he's going to be on with Father Mitch Pacwa tonight. I'm sure that will be wonderful because Father Mitch is so knowledgeable on so many things and loves our country and our country's history. So you and I were talking during the break, Doctor. I find it fascinating, as I mentioned, this whole conversation is so interesting. Thank you for your information. But you would think that when they were coming over to be part of this new country and to start this new land, that they would be open to other people because they felt, those who came over, you know, the first ones over here, were like, we're being discriminated against, we want to be free, and yet they discriminate against others who come here.
Yeah, right. So, and this point, your point is well taken. It's been made numerous times before, and it's actually one of the points students always bring up to me if I'm teaching this material. They say, why is that? You know, this doesn't make any sense to me. So I think one way to think about it is this. There's a couple of different facts that we can think about. Number one is that many people come to the colonies. We have to remember the colonial period in North America starts in 1607 with the founding of Jamestown in Virginia and lasts until 1776, right? So that's a long time, right? 170 years, basically, of colonial period. So when many people are coming over, they're not thinking, so to speak, that they're forming a new country, as in they're going to be independent, but they're looking for something. Those who come voluntarily to the colonies, they're looking for something new, right? And that could be, and oftentimes it's an economic opportunity. Sometimes it is for religious freedom, right? And so some groups, like, so if we think most famously, the Quakers in Pennsylvania had argued for religious toleration back in England and wanted in Pennsylvania for there to be religious toleration. And so in the 18th century, Pennsylvania passes laws to restrict Catholics from participating in politics. But Catholics did have a church in Philadelphia, Old St. Joseph's, if I'm not mistaken, that's founded, I believe, in 1733, although I might be off on that. But it's close to that period where they have mass publicly. And in fact, we know that some members of the Continental Congress, most famously John Adams, attended mass there, first mass he had seen, and he makes some kind of nasty comments about it. But it was it's very interesting. Some members of the Continental Congress go to mass while they're in Philadelphia, which is kind of interesting. Now, the other piece of this is that, look, in the 18th century, religion is a very major marker of identity. And so people took that very, very seriously. I sometimes say, like in the 20th century or 21st century, there's other markers of our identity in our world. Like we tend to see in America things in terms, or very commonly racial terms, like I'm white or I'm black or I'm Hispanic or whatever that is. Like that's a common way people describe themselves if you ask them. So they think of the world in that way. In the 18th century, the main way that they're thinking about themselves in the colonies seems to be in religious terms, Protestant versus okay. Catholic, or Quaker versus, you know, or Puritan, or what have you. And so maybe another way to think of it is kind of following sports teams today. Like I'm okay, a fan of this mm-hmm. team, and I love this team, and this, that, and the other. And so there's a great sense of identity that they get from their religious view point of view, and so they don't necessarily see this as I don't necessarily want this other guy here being able to do whatever he wants to do in my community. So I think that's part of what this is. And again, you have to think too is that religion is supported by laws in Europe and in the colonies. And those laws restrict what people can say and do. And most people are simply accepting of this. Now, of course, there's a number of people in the colonies who oppose that, and they'll get their say after the revolution when they begin passing laws for religious freedom and such.
Looking back, what impressed you the most, Doctor, about the determination and the interest of Catholics back then to make a difference, especially where religious liberty is concerned?
Right. So, you know, I the thing that I thought that we see in American history that's very interesting among Catholics in particular in the United States, and I'm sure if you think of members of your own family, you can even think of examples. But Catholics, one of the ways that they tried to fit in was to participate, right? So think of how many members, if you have a Catholic family, served in the military, for example, or mm-hmm. served in one of America's wars. This was a common way in the 19th century and in the 20th century, even in the Revolution, where Catholics would say, hey, look, this is our place. I put my life on the line for this country. This is my home. I mean, I may have a weird last name or whatever, but the point is that I grew up here, I live here, I participated here, I voted here, I served in my community here, I served in the military. In other words, there's a sense that you participate and you demonstrate your loyalty, and so therefore you earn your liberties that are given. And so this is a common thing in American history, not just for Catholics, but other minority groups. African Americans, for example, have a very similar ethic in various times in their history in this country. And that idea of participation, showing loyalty, and then you're rewarded, so to speak, mm-hmm. with liberty or with belonging. And so I think that for Catholics, think about it in 1776, there's no there's no guarantee that your neighbors are going to award you religious freedom if you join up. But yet, many of them do. Most famously, there's a famous example in 1775, George Washington bans the celebration of Guy Fawkes Day, which was the it was a Protestant celebration of the destruction of the gunpowder plot, where Guy Fawkes was a Catholic and had planned to blow up Parliament, and he got caught. And that's a whole story. It's a very interesting thing. But people would celebrate that day in the colonies with anti-Catholic speeches, marches, this, that, and the other. And George Washington bans that celebration in the Continental Army because they're a Catholic serving. And he says this would be, you know, that's kind of rude to our fellow soldiers here. Notice fellow soldiers, right, who are fighting for them. So there, probably about 5% of the Continental Army are Catholics. That's probably a good estimation. Still a small minority, right? It's not that Catholics are the dominant force here, but certainly they're participating. They're participating and looking to show their loyalty, and in return, they welcome their liberties. And think about the other aspect of it. I think, for example, in many Catholic parishes around July 4th, the Knights of Columbus do many different mm-hmm. things, right? Very patriotic. And they're demonstrating, and Knights of Columbus do all kinds of charity work with promoting, helping Catholic soldiers, for example, who are serving, giving rosaries or literature for them, this kind of stuff. Think about this. So Catholics are saying, look, you've served, now you have these liberties, we're one of you now. So don't tell us anything, don't tell us differently. I'm not somehow some disloyal person who wants to destroy this country or something like mm-hmm. that, right? I've served, I've been here. Yeah. That's a very critical part of the American Catholic experience.
Yeah, I think it brings such deep perspective in terms of whom we should be appreciating here. Obviously, God, because this country is very unique in terms of, I truly believe God had his hand all over this, especially if you look at the documents and religious liberty, that whole issue, the First Amendment, Establishment Clause. But in terms of how Catholics these days should be looking at our nation, religious liberty, and the early Catholics, what would you say? What should we be praying about this weekend, Doctor, when we look back at the history of our country? Do you
think? Right, that's great. So I think that part of the issue today is that religious liberty sometimes looks a little different for us today mm-hmm. because we were not having to have secret masses and our priests were prohibited from living in the states in which we reside. Where mm-hmm. colonial Catholics had that. So maybe religious liberty today has the connotation of being kind of an indifferent thing, like people don't really care about religion. So religion is falling away in public life, right? And so there's a sense among many today, certain people I would say, that they tend to see religious liberty as a tremendous problem for Catholics, right? This seems to weaken our faith's claims. I mean, if it's true, it's true, right? And so right. Why are we hiding this behind saying, well, I think that, you know, this guy who doesn't believe in God and this guy who believes in 20 gods and this guy who does this, they're all the same. Is that what I'm saying with religious liberty? And so I think like that's, you hear that critique a lot today. But I think mm-hmm. that in context, we have to remember that our Catholic ancestors who were around in the late colonial period in the Revolution, they had a very different experience. They were prohibited from even participating in public life. And so the idea of religious freedom for them was not to make religion meaningless in their lives, but it was allow them to speak openly and practice their religion without persecution. And I think that's the sense in which it's probably best to understand what they were arguing for.
Yeah, I just think that sometimes we take so much for granted every time we go to Mass. And I'm always moved when I hear the song, I'm going to talk about this on my show on Friday. We have a special edition that we're doing for the holiday weekend. But the song, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, always brings tears to my eyes. And I just think of how much often, Doctor, we take for granted, given everything that people have done for this country over the centuries.
Sure. I mean, certainly that's part of, as I mentioned earlier, that part of Catholics in America have been to say, hey, look, we sacrificed, we participated. This is, you can't tell us this isn't our place too. Not ours as it's only ours, but we have a role here. We've played a part in this. You can't tell us we don't belong.
Yeah, really. So what are you going to talk about with Father Mitch? Are you going to continue this type of conversation? Is there some exclusive insider tip that you're going to give him about Catholics and early
history?
I'm not
sure yet. You know, we'll draw something out, but we'll kind of flesh out some of this stuff a little more maybe and take it in some different directions. So we'll see.
How will you be celebrating this huge anniversary, given your background in history, particularly, Doctor?
Well, I will be eating some good barbecue and spending time with my family and friends and probably shooting off some fireworks like any good American would do these days.
About what should we be praying as we get into this anniversary and think about all the religious freedom, even though we have many issues? We did have that great report that just came out from the Religious Liberty Commission that was appointed by President Trump in the 12 points, and especially helping people understand the true meaning of the First Amendment, that the words, you know, the separation of church and state are nowhere in that First Amendment or in the Constitution. But beyond that, for what should we be praying in light of our history and the church? What do you think?
Look, I mean, one of the things, I'll take this from somebody who would probably laugh if he was here talking about praying, and that's Benjamin Franklin. But Benjamin Franklin was asked after the Constitution, you know, there's a famous kind of anecdote about him, what did you produce in here? And he said, a republic if you can keep it. And the point was is that in the founding generation, whatever specific political beliefs you had, people were pretty certain that, look, you know, liberty is something that can easily be lost. It has to be fought for. It has to be cherished. It has to be kept. And so that's up to us for us to do that. And so I think we should pray for fortitude, for the virtue of fortitude, to keep our liberties and to respect others in our society today.
Dr. Tate, what a great time with you this morning. Thank you so much. Fascinating. More of this great information tonight on Father Mitch, EWTN Live. We'll be right back. Wishing you a beautiful Wednesday. It is July 1st. Here we are. Can you believe it? In July. And this is such a special week. And I thought Dr. Tate had so much great information. It's something, as he said, to think and pray about as we move toward the 4th of July weekend, and not just the 4th of July, which is always a very important and wonderful holiday, especially when it comes to faith and recognizing who we are as a country, but the fact that we are celebrating 250 years. And I think the timing of the World Cup, and I want to mention that again, and I'll probably do something on this tomorrow in my 2 cents segment, because I've been very moved by some of the videos and the very sincere apologies of people from countries all around the world saying that we were lied to. The media sold us a bill of goods. They are stunned at what they're seeing in this country. And I think a lot of what Americans are portraying, and I know this from being American. I'm Italian-American, and yes, we live part of the time in Italy, but of course we still maintain our home in the U.S. and love our home in the U.S. I think a lot of it comes from the morality of the vast majority of people, because they are people of faith. Regardless of what the media, the secular media, try to tell you or the culture tries to tell you, at the end of the day, this is still a God-fearing country made up of great people. So be kind of fun for you to see some of those videos if you haven't. And again, I'm not encouraging you to scroll endlessly, but I think you would enjoy seeing some of those videos. So we'll talk a little bit about that tomorrow. I may even play some of the audio from some of these young people especially. And then, of course, Father Mitch Pacwa joining us for Cultural Connections. I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about this weekend and even the Supreme Court decisions. Have a beautiful Wednesday. Talk to you tomorrow on a Thursday.